your home for classic hits. 1570 AM, 96.9 FM, and now at 102.7 FM. This is WILO, Frankfort, Lebanon, Delphi.
Hey Liz, can you believe there are still some people buying their gold, silver, and platinum bullion from the internet?
That's pretty amazing, Jeff, especially considering that prices here at Vierks Fine Jewelry always beat both local as well as the big online guys. We don't have shipping fees, and in most cases, you get the precious metals immediately.
Bars, rounds, bags, eagles, buffaloes, maple leafs, Krugerrands, Morgan and Peace dollars, and much, much more.
Not to mention rare, key date, and collectible coins from the U.S. and around the world, many of which have been graded and authenticated by PCGS and NGC.
Whether buying, selling, or trading, you will always benefit from Vierks' unrivaled years of experience and expertise.
If you need expert appraising, Vierks Fine Jewelry has both of Lafayette's only International Society of Appraisers and Coin Roundtable members, and we are also fully USPAP compliant.
All of your coin and precious metals needs under one roof.
Proudly serving the Mid-North Indiana area for over 75 years. Corner of 18th and Main, Lafayette, Vierks.com.
Looking for reliable heating and cooling services? Look no further than Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning, your independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. From residential and commercial services to generator maintenance and custom ductwork fabrication, they handle it all. Jim serves Clinton, Boone, and Carroll counties, including the nearby areas. Jim's is a family-owned business with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. Call Jim's today at 765-601-1461.
Jim here from Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning. Remember, trusted service and local excellence.
Are you ready for a smoother ride? Head over to Big O Tires, the team you trust next to Parkies in Lebanon. Their expert team is dedicated to keeping you on the road with top quality tires and exceptional service. Schedule your appointment today for a hassle-free experience. Call Big O Tires in Lebanon today. And don't forget to check Big O Tires out on Facebook for exclusive deals and updates. And like manager John and owner Alan always say,
and don't forget, go Cowboys.
Come on, John.
Thanks for coming, elves. I've called this meeting because I don't know what to get Santa for Christmas this year.
Mrs. C, TC Trailers has everything Santa loves. They have over 300 trailers on the lot, a fully stocked parts store, and in-house repair shop. They even offer financing.
And did you know TC Trailers carries e-bikes and mopeds? Santa would love an e-bike for the off-season.
They carry barns and sheds, too. Santa was looking for a place to store more reindeer feed.
East of Frankfort, Estate Road 28 and 29, or tc-trailers.com.
If you're not pulling a TC Trailer, you're not pulling your weight.
Did you know there are benefits to window tinting other than that cool and sleek look? Keeping your vehicle's interior protected is one of those benefits. Marchand's Window Tinting does top quality window tint installation. It comes with a lifetime warranty. Located on State Road 39 in Antioch, Marchand's Window Tinting is professional and locally owned with years of expertise.
This is Alan Marchand at Marchand's Window Tinting, and we stick it where the sun shines.
We know you have choices, and at Encompass Credit Union, it's our commitment to community that sets us apart. Hi, I'm Matt Lambert, CEO of Encompass Credit Union. We offer a range of services with you in mind, from home banking to mobile banking on the go and e-statements for a greener approach. Plus, our card services makes managing your finances a breeze. At Encompass, we're not just a financial institution. We're your neighbors, your friends, your community. Ready to experience the difference? Visit EncompassCU.org today. Encompass Credit Union, community-minded, just like you.
Hey everyone, it's Rick from Freckles Graphics, Indiana's hottest graphic design, screen printing, embroidery, and promotional products company. But now we're new and improved with the addition of laser etching, embossing, and all your signage needs. We are officially your Swiss Army knife when it comes to all your marketing needs. Don't get burned by online empty promises. Get what you want, when you want, and how you want it with Freckles Graphics. Team up and take control of your apparel and marketing needs with a local company that puts you first. Freckles Graphics has a friendly staff, complete art department, and lightning fast turnaround. At Freckles Graphics, we're here to make you look good. So trust the pros at Freckles Graphics. Give us a call at 449-8463. That's 449-8463 or FrecklesGraphics.com.
People ask a lot of questions about Ivy Tech Community College. Like, can an Ivy Tech degree get me a good career? Well, some say good, and some say great. In 2 years or less, you can earn an associate degree or certificate, qualifying you for some of Indiana's fastest-growing career fields, and earning you an average of $37,777 the first year after graduation. Find your answers at ivytech.edu/FAQ. Then apply for free at ivytech.edu.
Wow.
Welcome back to Party Line. We want to thank our sponsors for letting us be on the air and tolerating us, basically, especially the conversations we have. WILO Party Line is presented by TC Trailers. If you're not pulling a TC trailer, you're not pulling your weight. Encompass Credit Union, community-minded just like you. Marshan's Window Tinting in Antioch. We stick it where the sun shines. Virk's Fine Jewelry in Lafayette. Ivy Tech Community College, changing lives. Big O Tires in Lebanon. Big Deals, save money now and 24/7 at WeLoveBigDeals.com. Freckles Graphics, Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning, Boone County, Clinton County, and Carroll County Daily News, your free online news sources for Delphi, Lebanon, Carroll, Flora, and, of course, Frankfort, Colfax, and everybody in all the counties and the surrounding areas, because we do reach out past the counties a little bit. Not a lot, but we do. The WILO Party Line online telecast at HoosierLandTV.com. That's working today. It didn't yesterday. It recorded, but it didn't do the live broadcast. But, Jordan, you can wave. We have the live going on today. 51 West Event Center, the Farmers Bank, Colligan Water of Boone and Clinton County, Day and Ginda Funeral Home, Reinhardt Realtors, TC Trailers, Solidarity Community Federal Credit Union, Sam Ian Carpet Cleaning, Shoops Country Foods, Big O Tires in Lebanon, Freckles Graphics, Arborwood by Shoops, Welty Exteriors, and Newell's Gas. Of course, if you want to call into today's program, 765-659-3338. And we want to thank our guests. We've been sitting here talking sports on off the mic. Our guest is today, Clinton County Commissioner President Jordan Brewer. Long time no see.
Good to be back. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you back. And are you glad harvest is over?
Yeah, it kind of feels like it's been over for a while because it was record pace, at least for our farm and probably many farms here in Clinton County and surrounding areas, because the fall just being as dry as it was. So we finished in the earliest we've ever finished.
Well, that's why Alan Dunn was on yesterday, and that's one of the things that he mentioned too. But we talked about how exhausted everybody was because there was no break, and it just kept moving.
I'll take no break and let's just go. Then we don't have to worry about the weather as much.
Mm-hmm. before we get to county business, I do want to. I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked him because everything was dry. Some of the driest corn, especially corn and beans, that we've taken out of the fields for a while. Did you still run stuff through the dryer just to, as he said, desanitize, or did you just drop it? If it was already dry and down to 15% or a little lower, you went ahead and just dropped it right in the bins?
Most of our stuff was 17 to 19. The last few fields were where we could bin them at 14.5%, 15%. But most of ours was in that range. We tried to get to it early enough. Now, beans a little different. This was probably the driest beans we've ever had, which is a negative in beans because that means we're not selling as much water at the standard percent, 13%. So it ends up being a yield loss if you really calculate it out, right? Like yeah. You're not getting as
not
many
to mention,
bushels.
Not so. To mention what you're shattering.
Yeah.
It's not even making it into the combine.
We saw a lot of, no one was exempt. Didn't matter the color of equipment you ran. There was a lot of green fields this fall from beans that just can't make it into the equipment, whether they get hit by the head or they shatter off the head. It was just because they're so dry. So
sure,
yeah, it was but corn wise we dried most of ours. There was, I don't know, a few hundred acres that came out at that 15-14.5% range.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how well it keeps, whether we see a lot of people dump their crops, what they got in storage, they dump it early.
Yeah, I think people are going to hang on until they feel like they get a better price.
Yeah, yeah.
That's usually the mentality.
One way or another, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, it's been a while since you've been here, and I know, you know, part of one of the big things that's going on, and of course everybody drives past it, a lot of progress going on the annex building. How's that going?
It's going really well. obviously any construction, there are some valleys with it at times, but we've kind of mitigated most of those, and it's progressing well. Still, I always tell people when they ask, because I know this is probably the next question, when is it going to be finished? And I say, I'm being told it'll be this spring. So we'll see if they continue to make that timeline. But we haven't lost any time. They've kind of stayed on the same schedule that's been out there. So we're excited to continue to see it. And now it's nice for, as you said, when you drive by to actually see something there rather than just a hole. It's hard to visualize what was conceptually going to be put there, but now that it's physically starting to come together, I think people are excited about it.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see some of the brick already going on the outer face.
Yeah, yep. And so I think that's once it's fully done, people will appreciate hopefully the beauty and the designed to blend in with the historical context of downtown, which is what we wanted to try and accomplish with that, right? Like to revitalize the downtown, that corner of it, but also not make it this modern building that didn't look out of place, but fits in just like the rest of our historical buildings down there.
A lot of scaffolding up on the courthouse now, especially on the upper levels. I was really kind of surprised to see that already with everything that they've been doing. So what's the prognosis on that?
So that's just all part of the exterior project. And so they started last fall, so they're a little over a year. I would expect it to probably be done by the summer. It was roughly a year and a half. Again, we've kind of stayed on progress with it, on timeline, especially this fall with, you know, just what we were talking about, right? Like they didn't have a lot of weather delays, so we were able to keep things moving. You know, they're doing some work looking into the clock and the interface up there and just some of the details that get weathered over time that are part of the historical structure of that and the integrity of that building, that facility.
Well, and it takes time to, because you're not totally remodeling, you're trying to preserve and restore, and that takes longer.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before, and I'm sure people just forget, but the exterior really has not had much other than a few Band-Aids here or there done to it since the 70s. And that's a lot of time for the weather to eat away at that limestone. And that building's not something we want to deteriorate to a point that it's either not serviceable or you have to tear it down. I mean, that'd be tragic, right? Like,
right.
So that's why we have to invest in it when the time comes around, and we're definitely there. But there's a lot of you know, just cracks and crevices that have needed to be addressed.
Yeah, limestone, granted, limestone is harder. It does seem to last better than concrete. Concrete, for some, you know, it just does not wear well over the years. But limestone, it does decay. It almost sugars.
Yeah.
Almost like marble does.
Well, I think it's an interesting question to consider. Do you think our forefathers, when they built this in 1882-ish, that time frame, that they thought we'd still be using it today in, you know, 2024? I'm guessing they didn't think that far ahead.
Probably not. I wouldn't think they would even fathom that.
No.
But, I mean, I think they picked limestone because at the time, with what they were working with, it was the better choice. For longevity and for the cost and everything, it was the one that made the most sense. But yeah.
So that was the limestone. The other courthouses built. There was a sister one over in Madison County, and I believe it's no longer there. But it was made out of brick, and the Clinton County commissioners elected to use limestone, and it was a $50,000 upgrade to do that versus doing the brick. So that was obviously a wonderful decision by them back then, but it just goes back to my question. I don't think they ever considered that the building would still be in use this many years down the road. I mean, you know, when we make decisions now, even with the annex, we're like, well, you know, 30 years down the road, 50 years down the road, but we're not thinking 100 years down the road in our decision making and wanting that longevity. But it's just ironic to think about it in those terms.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was going to ask you that. Like, how far away ahead are you guys thinking when you're making decisions like that? Like, you're not thinking 150 years down the road. And I think when we think about that, we're like, technology is going to change so much that it's going to be completely different.
No, we're 25 to 30. I mean, that's kind of what we look at it from that lens. And some of it's just based on, and this is not to be a knock on anybody, but we don't build things like we used to either.
No, you're right.
And whether that's, you know, just from the material we use or the craftsmanship or whatever it is. So they typically tell us based on what we're getting, it has a 20 to 30 year life expectancy. And that's kind of the time frame we look at. We're not really considering 100 years down the road.
Yeah, I just, well, of course, I'm twice your age anyway. But, you know, just thinking about it and seeing in my lifetime how, I don't want to be mean about it, but quality. In quality in the materials, sometimes quality in the work, not always. I mean, we have, you know, there's a lot of good craftsmen and good artisan out there that are still doing this and still architects and still building great facility, but they don't have the materials to work with, not like what they used to.
Yeah.
And I think that's in anything at this point.
Any and everything.
Yeah.
You know, we can take it down to, you know, even like cars, right? Like I think about this sometimes. I'm not even a car guy, but, you know, you have people that are into vintage cars from the 60s, 70s, even maybe even 50s or 40s, those time frames. I like, are they going to be into the 2024 vehicles now of 80 years down the road? Probably not, right? Like yeah. It's just different. And it's not pointing a finger or blaming anybody. It's just changed over time, and it is where we're at, and we make the decisions based on the information and, like you said, the quality of materials we have. I mean,
yeah, hindsight, I wish I had that 68 Pontiac GTO that I had. I mean, seriously, I wish I still had it, not because of the value of it, but because of the fact that it was built like a tank.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, we've just changed how we look at things. And even with the annex, and ultimately we believe it's the right decision, but, you know, originally we wanted to try and preserve the structure that was there, but it feasible and cost wise, it ultimately was a better decision to build new. And that's kind of where we've gone, maybe because of, from a material standpoint, we don't build it like we used to. So it's a lot easier to just dispose of it and start over fresh than to try and remodel or rebuild.
Well, and I don't think anybody had the thought until you really tore into it what the issues were with that building to begin with. I mean, what was it, three buildings?
Yeah, three different buildings.
Band-aged together, basically.
Yeah, over time, we're kind of just hodgepodge together. So they had a lot of different, even within those three, there was still a little, there was even some more differences in ceiling heights and roof lines. And then, there was just some issues with the possible asbestos in there. And when we purchased it, just how the timing fell, and it wasn't like there was an inspection and all this stuff, which we knew that going into it, that it was in rough shape and hadn't necessarily been taken care of to the extent of other buildings. And so, I mean, it was one of the issues, but ultimately it's what, you know, they talk about McDonald's, right? Like, what, McDonald's isn't in the hamburger business. They're in the real estate business. And for us, not that we're in the business, but that real estate has a lot of value, being that it's right across from the courthouse. So we still have some connectivity to our other offices, and it's on the square in our biggest city in our county, where everything's kind of centered around. And so that has value outside of what you actually pay that you have to consider when you're looking at making those decisions.
Right. I know this, the courthouse, working on the courthouse, and of course the annex building have been two of the largest projects that you have had on the books for the whole entire year, but you also got 65. What to you, I mean, I'm kind of reflecting on 2024, basically. How do you feel things are going, things have gone, and kind of put it into moving into 25? How do you feel like things like that, some of the projects that you guys have had going on, have weathered?
Well, I haven't even had a chance to take a breath and reflect yet, so I'm coming up with it on the spot, I suppose. I'm excited about it because everything we're doing is kind of steps towards the future. And obviously we have projects that don't just line up with a calendar year and cross over. So, you know, next year, do we have a lot of big projects outside of, you know, the continuation of the annex and then getting moved to the courthouse and starting the interior of that? No. Outside of our, you know, traditional road projects and such. But the way I would summarize it, even not even specific to any project, is that I think people make things happen. And that's when people are aligned in the same direction. Just like we were kind of talking about off air in terms of sports, I always relate it to sports because that's what my background is. That's how my mind works. And if you have, you know, in basketball, if you have four players doing one thing and one doing another, it ultimately fails, right? Like, you have to have that ability to work as a team. And we're at that position now between the commissioners and council that we have a lot of connectivity and all trying to work towards the same goal. Doesn't mean we always agree. Just means we can find common ground when we need to and continue to work through pushing Clinton County forward. And all the projects, ultimately, that is the goal. Like, there's nothing that is what I would call self-centered for any individual in anything that we're doing, right? Like, we're trying to move the county collectively forward and continue to grow, but also, as I always tell people, not lose our heritage. And our heritage is agriculture. So we have to figure out that balance between those two and continue to do that.
Well, I think that's one of those strong points that we have with the commissioners and also with the council is that, you know, you talked about our heritage being agriculture. You know, that's where my background's at, too. But the fact that we have members and commissioner, you know, that are in that agricultural field that helps keep that balance, along with businessmen.
Yeah.
And it seems like you guys are clicking on all cylinders.
It's going well from that standpoint. And I enjoy working with all the commissioners and counselors, and like I said, I think we have the team in place to continue to push things forward because everyone is doing it selflessly. And ultimately, you know, can that always be said in politics? No, because generally people run for some self-serving interest. But right now here, I don't see any of that. And that's why.
Yeah, you're definitely not doing it for the paycheck.
No, I mean, I tell people I do it for my kids' future and the other kids, because I just spoke to the leadership group, the sophomores, the other day, and kind of funny story, you know, you get 15, 16-year-olds, 8:30 in the morning, energy level's pretty low at that point, still maybe a little sleepy, and I'm like, I got to get two questions or you're doing jumping jacks for the next 10 minutes, like, you know. So finally I got them, you know, a little engagement. But one of the things I shared with them is like, and I don't need to go into that much depth about like my history, but that I left and came back. And when you're 15 and 16, you generally, how it was when I was in school, and I know it because I could see the head nods, like everybody wants to leave, right? Like, oh, I want to go find myself, explore, go to college. I want to go somewhere else, big city, whatever it is. But we need to still provide futures and opportunities for them to come back. And so that's what drives me, right? Like, just from my own personal decisions in life, like I left and then I came back, but this is a great place to raise a family and live and be a part of a community. And we have to show those younger people that they can do that and they don't have to leave for better opportunities. So that's what drives me to do this and to continue to look out for Clinton County.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that I've seen over the generations. You know, same thing in my family, my parents, my siblings, our kids, you know, go out, they go explore, they go to college elsewhere and see what they want. But a good number of them came back.
Yeah.
For the same reasons. Exactly that. Good place to raise a family, great schools. Just a great place to live all the way around.
I agree. And we just have to do a better job of continuing to not be stagnant and look at those opportunities, but then also convey what those are to our youth so that they feel that way and they see it.
Is there anything that you kind of wish that maybe you guys would have been able to accomplish that you didn't have on the books or you would have liked to? Or let's even expand that into 2025. What do you want to see happen?
I never really look back. I'm always kind of a look forward type of person. So, you know, it's not that I don't reflect and analyze how we've done things and how we can get better, but in terms of like, oh, we needed to do this and we didn't type of thing. No, I think we just continue down kind of the plans that we've set out. Obviously, from an economic development standpoint, we have some things in the pipeline. It'd be nice to get those across the finish line. So those would be, I mean, that would kind of be the area that really feels like we need to push a little harder on and get across the finish line, as I mentioned, because, you know, we have the roundabout out there now. We have the infrastructure out there. So let's start to see some things materialize. Now, you know, what's happening to our South is kind of, is there stuff happening? Is it paused? And then with the change of leadership at the state level with Governor Braun and what his new direction is going to be. So there's probably going to be a little lull here in the first quarter of 25 until people get their feet underneath them. Because as I always talk about with like economic development is, and people may not know this, is like we can't do it alone. So we always have to have state help, which is typically through that acronym IEDC, so Indiana Economic Development Corporation. They provide incentives. Otherwise, we're going to give away the whole farm to attract somebody, and there's no point. What, I mean, if you're going to give everything away to just have some structure, brick and mortar facility here, that's not benefiting the community as a whole. So we can't give away the farm. Like we have to bring something in that contributes to our pie to help everybody out. So if I am reflecting, is it's just we've been close on a few different deals and we haven't been able to get them close. So we got to reassess what we're doing and try and get them across the finish line.
You talked about it a little bit, just looking ahead to 2025, and obviously the courthouse and the annex are the two big things we're finishing. But after that, what are some things you guys are looking forward to in terms of projects and developments?
I don't even know, to be honest. It's so involved with those right now that I don't know that we have like a forward large projects, right? Like we have our traditional stuff that's going on. I mean, and honestly, I would actually throw in the fairground project. You know, we did add that to the books this year. And I mean, that's going to be roughly a $400,000+ project, just from taking down the old cattle barn to building the new facilities. So, you know, you add different projects like that here and there and they add up over time. So I'm sure we'll have another one of those or two pop up over the next year or two. But in terms of like a large, multi-million-dollar project, we're probably on hold for a little bit there's this whole financial side of the capacity of your assessed value and how much debt you can have. And so I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm guessing we're getting close to, where we won't have a lot of capacity to just take on huge, huge projects after that.
Right. Are you still looking at possibly another roundabout on the other side out at 65? Because I know that was kind of in some of the conversation. You've got the one, which have you taken your equipment through it? I haven't had a chance to talk to you since it's up and going and didn't know if you had been through it.
We do not haul much to the west, so we go to east mostly. So no, I have not taken anything through it, but I've been through it in a vehicle, and I've been around large trucks, and I mean, there's plenty of room.
Like, sure.
There shouldn't be any issue if... if they have a valid driver's license, they should be able to make it through there. So, I have not been in any conversations about a roundabout to the west of the interchange.
Do you think there would be a need for it? Or, I mean, I'm looking at the future possible expansions out there.
I would like to see something get out there first. And then, you know, it's the chicken and the egg, like which comes first, but we can't keep coming with the egg first all the time and have no chicken to help pay for the egg, right? So right. We need something or some things to happen, and then maybe that becomes the next next consideration on that side. I think I've heard it's a state thing, but I've heard some rumblings of possibly some stoplights put out there just from a traffic flow standpoint out of NHK and backing up 65. So I don't know. Again, they don't always communicate that with us very well, but I've heard that rumbling through the grapevine a little bit. So no, I don't know of right now that there's probably much appetite for another roundabout at this point in time. We'll kind of let this one have a couple years under its belt and
let this one settle, let the dust settle, yeah, so to speak.
And if it grows out there, which again, you know, is in the city and in the county, depending where you're at, then, you know, we have to start looking at possibly how do we move traffic better. That becomes an issue. But I think right now it's probably all right. I don't know if I want to go through two of them just yet. one, then get over, and then you can go.
Yeah, so. I get it. Cindy's been asking this since it's the end of the year, and it is kind of an interesting question. Magic wand, you could just wave it. Unlimited funding. Your budget is not a factor. What would you wish for the county?
Well, I would wish we didn't have property tax.
I was going to ask you about that, and I thought, that's kind of a...
Yeah, I mean, it'd be that simple, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, I'm kind of taking off my commissioner hat. I understand it.
No, like, I get it too.
But you know, you buy something, whether you have it mortgaged or you have it paid off, but you always are in debt to some degree because you have to pay property tax. So, like, do you ever truly, really own it? Like, I mean, yes and no. But at any point, if you don't pay your property tax, then there's liens put against it, right? So, that would be my magic wand, that we didn't have to, every citizen in Clinton County could own what they own and they didn't have to pay property tax. And
I'm right
there with you. And we could fund all the things we need to fund. I mean, ultimately, that's what it comes down.
We'd have to find another, there would be another way for all the funding to be there.
Yeah. And, you know, we have these conversations, not in a manner that probably really makes any change, but it's just, you know, conversational. And like a state like Florida, who doesn't have income tax, but they have tourism, right? So like, what would offset property tax, which is our largest revenue source for the county? Like, that's a big amount if it went away. Like, how are we going to make that up? I don't know the answer to that, but that'd be my magic wand.
Do you have an idea? And I mean, I'm just throwing this out there. Do you have an idea what our percentage of the property tax that comes in is agricultural and how much of it is business?
You're getting in the council wheelhouse a little.
Yeah.
I think that it's very important for a commissioner to understand the financial side of it. And I'm a finance guy. So like, I have a lot of conversations with the council and look at the numbers and evaluate that too. But you get a little more depth of, you know, some of those things. I just don't know them off the top of my head. I'm guessing it's a large percentage of it because most of our land is ag land, right?
Like, yeah.
And when it's $35 an acre, give or take, roughly, I mean, that's what it kind of averages out to right now of in property tax per acre. So it's a good percentage, which is what we're not on an island by ourselves, right? Like, this is all rural Indiana counties are in the same similar boat,
same
right?
Thing, yeah.
Like, except you have a metro Indianapolis area that has Marion County and what, four or five contiguous counties that are probably a little different. You have up in the region, you have Fort Wayne and you have Evansville and maybe, you know, a little bit down in like Jeffersonville, Floyd County area, you know, metro area of Louisville, but then the rest. So out of 92, you're probably looking at what, 80?
Yeah.
80 counties, roughly, I would call our rural counties. You got probably got 12, maybe 75, somewhere in that range of is rural, and everybody else, the other 15 or 12 are going to be the urban counties that probably generate very little off of agricultural land, but generate it all off commercial business. So I'm hoping they're going to have that conversation at the state level, because ultimately that's where there's no decision at our level. Like, people don't understand, like, it's not a local decision in that standpoint. It's a state level decision.
Yeah. I know they had a little bit of that conversation this past spring, this past year. And I think Bert was able to go down to listen to some of that. But yeah, I'm like you. It definitely needs to be revisited, because I think they're putting so much pressure on property owners, period, that we got to find another way to look at things.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like you said, nobody's going to own anything. You don't own it.
No.
No, I agree with you.
I mean, you really don't if you step back and think about it. Like, I mean, but that was going off on a different tangent. But that would be my magic wand for our community, which it would, you know, if it could just be us, that'd be fine too. If we got just the magic wand here, but I assume it would have to impact the whole state. So,
yeah, more than likely. Well, Jordan, again, we've been talking with Jordan Brewer, Clinton County Commissioner, President. Thank you so much for coming in. I'm glad to have you in. Glad to see everything went okay with harvest and everything with you and your family and business, I guess, for lack of a better term, because it is a business.
It's definitely a business. I appreciate that. I always enjoy coming on here and having conversations. And you guys obviously have some questions you want to ask, but it's nice because we kind of go down some different rabbit holes too. And to have those conversations is enjoyable. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Have a happy Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we look forward to seeing you, hopefully, because it is winter and we usually get you in the off season. Hopefully we'll see you again in January.
Yep. I'll be glad to come back. Thank you.
All right, Sam, thank you for stepping in and helping out. Appreciate it. You are listening to WILO and Boone 102.7. Stick around. Cindy will be in with the free play.